You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast.
The Sick Podcast.
With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the
sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne chose. Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs. John, you found the dogs. He found the dogs.
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Good Friday evening, everyone, and welcome to the Sick Podcast. I am Matt O'Han, your usual Friday host, even though in the text messages that we exchange, Samian and Yellow love to say that I never work and that I take every week off and that I never do anything. I can't really say much because I'll be off the next 2 weeks after this episode. But so they got me there. But hey, I am your usual Friday host, whether you like it or not. Welcome, everyone. Let's take care of some business. The Sick Podcast brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Energy Transportation Group is a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. We're also brought to you by La Bitte TB Beer, brewed in Quebec and a winner of a dozen international awards. La Bitte TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bit at TB, embrace your true nature. And by, of course, Playground. Discover a world of luxury at Playground. Explore their new 30,000 square foot expansion with thrilling games, gourmet dining, and live entertainment. Located just over the Mercier Bridge, only minutes away from downtown Montreal, Playground. Experience the strip without the trip. And buy sportsbuffshop.com. Shop all your sports licensed lifestyle apparel, including hoodies, caps, and tees of your favorite sports teams from all major leagues at sportsbuffshop.com. Use code SICK10 for 10% off all their items. Okay, so last week it was all sunshine and daisies for the Canadians because while they were losing, at least the top line was getting points, as Stu and I discussed last week. And fast forward a week, I mean, kind of not so sunshine and daisies. Well, it's sunshine outside in Montreal these days, but it's not great for the Canadians, especially since a certain tweet came out last week that had everybody worried. And then, hey, I guess maybe there was something to it. So let's talk about all these things with my usual Friday guest, Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette. Stu, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I don't need a therapy day. I don't know if you do, but I don't.
I think we could all use a therapy day once in a while.
once in a while. But hey, I mean, I guess today is my therapy day, was my therapy day, because I was off to work today. So, because I get every second Friday off. So maybe it was my therapy day. But last Sunday, or was it Monday, the tweet came out from the Canadians that Slavkovsky, Cole Caulfield, and Nick Suzuki all will not be practicing because they were in need of a therapy day. Now, it's only been two games since then, but they're all held pointless since then. So anything to that, or am I diving too deep in?
I think just as we're getting close to the 60-game mark in the season, this is not surprising for guys that play as many minutes as they do. Suzuki took a lot of therapy days near the end of last season. You know, he hasn't missed a game since he joined the NHL. He knows his body pretty well. If I remember, he blocked a shot not too long ago and went off to the bench. Maybe he's a little bit of a bruise there. I'm speculating or that. So it's not that shocking when I see guys take therapy days. And I think it's a thing that this new medical team and training staff with the Canadiens is really focused on, is letting guys know when they should take a day off. I spoke with Mike Matheson about it a couple of weeks ago after he took a therapy day. And he said it's sort of, he knows his body well, and he sort of discussed with the trainers and the coaches, and they're like, okay, take a day off today from practice. You don't need it. So a little bit of concern. There's obviously something there. But at this point in the season, when you played this many games, and especially for a guy like Suzuki with the amount of minutes he plays and tough minutes he plays, and the fact he's never missed a game, he knows his body pretty well. So, I mean, it's not a big deal to me at this point in the season.
All right. That's good to know, because, I mean, hey, for the tank crowd, more good news. The Canadian. Well,
if it was, I mean, they're out of the playoffs, right? If it was something serious, right, they wouldn't play them. If it was something that they thought would make the injury worse, they would take them out of the lineup. So if they're not missing the games, I don't think it's a big reason to be concerned. I think it's just part of, you know, you look at the NBA with their load management, where guys don't play games as a therapy day. We don't see that in the NHL yet. I hope we don't. You know, people who pay a lot of money to go watch a game and want to see the stars playing, you get there and they say, in the NBA, oh, the star is not, you know, today's a therapy day, he's not playing. You don't get a refund on your ticket.
I don't think we ever will see that, just because there's such a, in the NBA, like such a discrepancy in talent. Like how many, like, I don't think any team in the NHL can waltz. Let's just take the Habs, for example, can waltz into the Bell Center, you know, bottom, whatever team they are, and expect to win just on any given, you know what I mean? Like, the NHL doesn't really work like that. Where in the NBA, you know, if you're going to play the Detroit Pistons, who I think have like, I don't know, five wins all year, you could kind of expect to win without a big gun in the line.
Yeah, and in defense of the NBA guys too, I mean, the star players play basically the entire game, right? They might sit out for 2 or 3 minutes a game. You go see LeBron James play, especially, you know, in his younger years, you go see the star guys are on the court almost the whole game, which is one of the appeals of the NBA. You know, if you go see the Edmonton Oilers and want to see Connor McDavid, you're going to see him play maybe 20 minutes of the 60 minutes. But again, for paying fans, you know, if I went to an NBA game and I paid a lot of money and I wanted to see LeBron or I want to see the star player and I found that he wasn't playing because it was a you know, load management day, I wouldn't be happy.
Mm. Yeah, a lot, you know what? It's funny because there's a lot of talk in the NBA and what can be. The NHL is not the only imperfect league, because the NBA, they had an all-star weekend of their own, and much like the NHL's, it was
might have been worse. My son's a huge basketball fan, and I watched it. It was unwatchable. It really was. I actually did not watch the NHL all-star game this year for the first time in a long time. I didn't even bother. Same with the skills competition. I didn't even bother watching it. It's become unwatchable. But the little bit of the NBA that I did watch was pretty bad.
You know what I will say about the NHL, and good on them. And same thing with the NFL, because it's just all-star games across the board are just, I feel like we're in a post and we're past the need of an all-star game at this point.
Baseball is the only good all-star game because it's not a contact sport, right? So guys are, you know, right, against batters. So the baseball all-star game is always fun to watch, but that's it.
So at least the NHL and the NFL, they changed their format. And, you know, they used to play a 5-on-5 full hockey game in the NHL. The NFL, they used to play a full contact football game. Obviously, no one would tackle. The NHL changed to 3-on-3. The NFL changed to flag football. I don't know what you could do in the NBA, but it's funny because they have the in-season tournament to incentivize players to play during the year. Yeah. And now they're talking about, they added money to the in-season tournament. And now they're talking about, do we need to give bonuses for All-Star game? And it's like, come on, these guys make $33 million. Like, you don't need the extra $500,000.
No. And even like the slam dunk competition, which used to be huge, right? Now it's almost cool not to go in it, right? The guys, who is this dude?
Well, the dunks this year, I mean, we used to see, I remember when I was a kid, now I'm sounding old, I saw Dwight Howard, you know, the Nets, I think, in the NBA are about 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
And Dwight Howard dunked from, a little past the foul shot line on a 12-foot net. That was Superman. That was
Michael Jordan when he took off. Michael Jordan when he took off from the free throw line. That famous picture, his head's like above the rim when he's halfway towards the net.
That used to be the dunk competition. Now we have people jumping over people who are sitting on chairs. You know. Anyways, back to the Canadians. Good week for the tank crowd because the Canadians are on a 4-game losing streak.
Yeah.
It started against the Rangers, where kind of a bad, not the greatest performance, entertaining game though. But I really liked the game against Washington. Well, you know, I liked the game again last night too, but I liked the game against Washington because, you know, after the game, we saw some emotion. We saw players specifically who was under the spotlight with Slafkovský pissed off that they lost. Yeah. And I really liked that.
Yep, and he was dropping F-bombs. I wasn't in that scrum. I was talking with Jake Allen at the time, but the guys were in. He was upset, and that's good. I mean, they care these guys. I mean, the thing with the Canadians now is that for the tank fans, this is great, right? The more games they lose. And, you know, I imagine Kent Hughes will probably get rid of a couple more guys by the trade deadline. They'll be even worse. So that's good news for them moving forward. But, I mean, I remember years ago when Guy Lafleur said the Canadians were a team with 4 fourth lines. And at the time, he was pretty much right. That was like 6 years ago. Now they have one number one line and 3 fourth lines. And, with Doc having been out, and I wrote a column this week, Doc and Newhook, that really threw a wrench into their plans for rebuilding the season, just it limited the amount of line combinations Marty St. Louis could tinker with and figuring out whether Newhook is better at center and the wing. It looks like he's going to be better at the wing, who Doc plays. But that really threw a wrench into them. With Joshua Roy being called up and looking pretty good, you know, you wonder if he could be a top six forward moving forward. When he played with Connor Bedard at the World Juniors, Connor Bedard said he was one of the smartest players he ever played with. His hockey IQ was really good. So it's going to be a long, you know, the rest of the season is going to be tough. They got 3 fourth lines. They're getting goals from the defense and they're getting offense from the first line. But if the first line doesn't produce like they haven't the last couple of games, you know, they're not going to win.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Yeah, it's a good, but again, like we said, it's good for the tank crowd. They're all happy because rumors are swirling. People are arguing in the middle of February who the Canadians should take in the draft. It's unbelievable.
It's good. It's good for a kid like Joshua Roy, who's getting the play now, get some, you know, decent minutes, and you got 2 assists the other night, and without, you know, the pressure of having to win or the fear of making mistakes. So they'll get a good look at Joshua Roy the rest of this season. It'll be interesting to see. I imagine they'll send him back to Laval before, I believe it's March 5th is the deadline, because I think a playoff run with Laval would be better for his development than staying with the Canadians. But it's an opportunity to see some of these young guys. And also, you know, the competition for spots on the blue line with the young defenseman. I know when Sportsnet came out with their list of top 30 trade prospects for the draft, and Jordan Harris was one of the guys on there. And like you want, there's no doubt that, he's been bumped down with the play of Jaden Struble, although it looked like Struble was hurt last night and might be serious. Jordan Harris has been dropped down on the depth chart with the Canadiens defense. So it's going to be interesting to see leading up to the trade deadline what Kent Hughes does. I wouldn't be surprised if he does nothing. I wouldn't be totally shocked. He might be looking more towards the offseason to make these moves. He even mentioned that with the three-goalie system. Like he'd like to make a trade at the deadline to get the two goalies. But if there's not a deal there that he likes, he's willing to go the rest of the season with three goalies. And then during the summer, see if there's maybe some kind of a package deal where he could include Jake Allen and sort of settle that goaltending situation moving forward.
Yeah, the more I think about it, and you mentioned his name in Jordan Harris, the more I've thought about it, the more I think that Kent Hughes will, in my head, in my formulation, he might have something else in his head. He probably does. But in my head, it really makes sense to move a defenseman or two because, you have to deal with waivers if you want to send some guys down. And frankly, if they want to bring up Lane Hudson, when his contract, they need space.
Logan Mayo, Rheinbacher, they got lots of young defense coming up. And I like Jordan Harris, one of the nicest kids I've ever met, inside or outside of hockey. But Jaden Struble came in, and Jaden Struble is a better player than him. And, Arber Jacki brings an element that we saw 2 games ago there when, the Sheriff was back. That's the way Arber Jacki needs to play, physical, tough, not taking penalties, confident, moving the puck. We've seen a different Arber Jacki the last couple of games. He brings an element different than what Jordan Harris has, and Struble sort of does what Harris does with a little bit more physicality. So that's why he sort of dropped down the depth chart, and I wouldn't be shocked. I can understand why Jordan Harris was on that list, and I wouldn't be shocked if he's moved either at the trade deadline or this summer as some kind of a package deal, because I'm almost certain Kent Hughes is going to move that second first-round pick he has and package it with something else and pull another sort of Kirby Dach, Alex Newhook move and try and get a forward who can provide some offense, because this team, as I said, they have 3 fourth lines basically right now. They need a lot more talent up front if this rebuild is going to succeed moving forward.
I agree. And for the fans clamoring of that they should wait it out with what they have, because there is a contingency of fans out there like that. Mm-hmm. Kirby Dach is not the difference between this team being a potent offensive team or not.
You're getting
inserting him in the lineup doesn't make it not a major difference maker.
Well, even if he's there, it's not a major difference if you're getting almost no offense out of Brendan Gallagher, you're getting almost no offense out of Josh Anderson, you're getting very little offense out of Joel Armia, you're getting almost no offense out of Jake Evans. I mean, you go down the list, Ullin, I don't think, has scored a goal in like 35 games or something like that now. There's just too many guys, too many forwards on the Canes who can't score. And guys like, Brendan Gallagher was $6.5 million. And Josh Anderson with $5.5 million, whatever it is, they're paid a lot of money, and you're not getting any offense out of them. And in a salary cap world, that really hurts.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's just going to continue. And frankly, I think it should be pointed out that I think I'm ready to say that they should have. Hindsight is obviously 2020, mm-hmm. but they should have moved on from Josh Anderson when they had the chance last season.
And I said last season, I said keep him. Yeah. Even earlier this season when he came back and was struggling, I said he's going to finish the season with 20 goals. He's too good of a player not to get 20 goals. And I don't know what's happened. I don't know if that long stretch he went at the beginning of the season played with his head, but there's games now you don't notice him. He used to get like a breakaway every game, it seemed, or two. He'd miss most of the time, but he got them. Like, you don't see the breakaways now either. He's not as physical as he was. There's something, I don't know what, it's hard to explain what's happened to Josh Anderson. And last season, when a lot of people, you might have been one of them, saying, they should trade him. And I was like, no, because if you trade him, you're going to be trying to find another guy like him. But now, you're basically stuck with him at this point. I can't see other teams knocking down the door to get him. And if they do, you're going to want the Canadiens to eat a big chunk of that salary. So I think it's just a case with Josh Anderson and with Brendan Gallagher. You just got to hope they can find their game. I mean, you hope Josh Anderson can come back and be that 20-goal scorer again. Brendan Gallagher, I don't think he'll ever be a 30-goal scorer again. Can he be a 15-goal scorer? The thing with Gallagher that I always like and admire, the work ethic's always there. You know, it's compete level's always there. But age and injuries look like they've just caught up to him. Like the game, he can't keep up the way he used to keep up. And, you know, he's minus 23. He's among the worst plus minuses for those, you know, in the NHL. He's not scoring. He was demoted to the fourth line for a few games at $6.5 million. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Brendan Gallagher has earned every single dollar the Canadiens will ever pay him. You know, he was underpaid when he was a 30-goal scorer. He's overpaid now. But when a guy's working and competing as hard as he can and the results aren't there, I'm not going to be critical of the guy the way a talented guy who's not competing and isn't producing. So for Brendan Gallagher, the compete level is always there. He's a prideful player. I wrote a column this week. You know, he's obviously not happy being on the fourth line. You don't want him to be happy, but he's still a good teammate. He's still a leader in the room. And I think at this point with Brendan Gallagher, the buyout penalty to buy him out now is pretty steep. I think you just hang on to him. You hope that he can regain some offense. And the other thing in his defense, as he said, he played really well earlier this season when he was on a line with Monahan and Pearson, that veteran line. Remember when Marty put
that
and people were like, what's he doing? Then he had 5 goals in his first 14 games or something like that, playing on that line. And we're all talking about how great, you know, Brendan Gallagher's back and he looks great. But he just hasn't found that fit. And I wrote a column this week saying, you know, when Mark Bergevin let Philip Danault get away, he almost lost 2 players because Gallagher and Danault were so good together. And he hasn't found that center apart from when he played with Monahan and Pearson. Obviously, Monahan's gone now. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can find like some line that might work with Brendan Gallagher to get him going. It used to be when a line wasn't working, you put Brendan Gallagher on it and he got that line going. Those days for Brendan Gallagher are gone. Now he needs guys to help him. So you know, I'd love to see Brendan Gallagher do well. As I said, there's so much like about Brendan Gallagher, even now, that the compete level and everything else, but it just seems like, you know, age and the way he played for so many years, he's paying a price for it now. And, you know, that contract Mark Bergevin gave him rewarded him for all those 30 goal seasons and everything he did and, you know, playing through broken jaws and everything else and mangled fingers and that contract he deserved to be rewarded for it. The problem was the length of the contract is really what's going to come back and bite the Canadiens.
Yeah. It's, you know, after this season, still have him and Josh Anderson still have three more after this year. And I really like one thing that you're dealing in is that you're the way you're speaking right now is it's, I hope a lot of fans pick up on this is that you're not saying, you know, oh, where can the Canadians, you're well grounded in the fact that the Canadians are stuck with him and Josh Anderson.
Yeah.
Like, there's no moving them.
You're not moving them. And as I said, you just got to, you know, figure out they're going to be, you know, moving forward, Josh Anderson is going to be an expensive third line winger and Brendan Gallagher is probably going to be an expensive fourth line winger, maybe getting bumped up to the third line once in a while. It's, you know, but other teams around the league, just about every team has contracts that they wish they could get out from, right? But the Canadiens, that's 2 with the Canadiens. Again, Josh Anderson, younger. Again, I think that when he wasn't scoring earlier this season, he was playing well. He just couldn't score. Remember, sticks were breaking when he had an open net. He was hitting posts. He was missing breakaways like he unfortunately does a lot. But recently, you know, the breakaways aren't there. He's not getting the chances. And I really wonder if what he went through mentally earlier in the season is still taking a toll on him. He's just not the player that he was last season. And I'm not 100% certain he can't get back to being that player. You know, I don't think he's playing through an injury or anything like that. There's no therapy days or whatever going on. And I know he had been out for a little while earlier this season. But it's hard for me to explain what's happening with Josh Anderson right now. Because last season, as I said, I was like, keep him. I mean, he's a valuable guy. And when you lose him, you're going to be looking to try and find another one.
You know, this is probably a tough indictment on Josh Anderson, but I'm going to say it anyways, which is, you know, and this is why it's tough is because I just looked up his age and he's only going to be 30 in May. this is what we're seeing, what would have happened if we're seeing the Josh in Josh Anderson if the Canadians held on to Jeff Petrie for one more year.
This is what we're seeing right now.
This is what happened.
In today's NHL, it's like 30, 31 is the age where some guys get old real quick. Like, the game is so fast now. And especially, you know, a guy like Petrie played a ton of minutes. A guy like Brendan Gallagher played a hard minutes. The game gets a little bit quicker every year, right? Every year, a guy gets younger. The talented players are better. They're faster. They're quicker. So as the game gets faster every year, if you get that little step slower, you add those two things together, and it's not a good combination. And that's sort of like Brendan Gallagher. You know, Brendan Gallagher, at the end of every shift when he was at his best, he'd get to the bench and he looked like he was going to die, right? He had given everything he had every single shift. He'd get to the bench, he'd look like he's going to die. He'd have his rest, he'd get back out there, and he'd do the same thing again, 100%. Now, it looks like he's almost going to die 10 seconds left in the shift. You know what I mean? Like, he's out of gas before the shift is over, as opposed to before. Like, the tank would go empty and he'd get to the bench and it would fill. It would empty and fill, but now it's the tank's emptying a little quicker. And I think,
or it's just going to half, you know?
It's not the game has gotten faster. And you got to remember, he broke his ankle twice last year. His hands have been mangled. He's had, Brendan Gallagher is an old man. Is going to get up every morning and it's going to hurt everywhere. Right?
He's going to feel it.
And that's why, again, like, I can't be overly critical about Brendan Gallagher, because the reason he's broken down the way he has is because of the way he played. You know, he could have put in a half-ass effort some nights and saved his body and maybe be a little bit better now. That's just not, it's not Brendan Gallagher, and it's not him now. I mean, he's still giving everything he's got, but he just doesn't have what he used to have. And age, Father Time's undefeated. And he's looking like another example of that. And you know, moving forward, the Canadians are going to be, again, if he's an overpaid third or fourth liner, you put him on the fourth line, he's going to work his butt off and do what he can do. And you're not expecting a ton of goals from him then. But again, the length of that contract that Mark Bergevin gave him, you know, it's a warning for other GMs. Like, that age, over 30 years old, man, you got to be careful if you're paying a lot of money to those guys. And somebody I know who's involved in NHL front offices, we were talking about analytics one day, and he's telling me one of the analytics that his team did wasn't some of these fancy stats. It was production of guys over 30. That was an analytics that his team really looked into heavily, figuring out, like, what are guys – let's compare – analytics from guys 27, 28, 29, and then 30, 31, 32. And he said they got, he didn't divulge the results of everything they had, but he said it was really interesting what they came up with. And I think that's the thing with analytics moving forward. So much of it is what's happening, like time and zone or all these things. But I think it's important moving forward for teams, analytics, like how, at what age do these guys really drop off? And as an average, and then take it from there. I mean, Sidney Crosby is obviously an exception. Rare guys. Yeah. But in general, it seems to me, look at Alex Ovechkin. I mean, this year he's got a little bit of a role again, but he got old fast. And it's really a thing in the NHL now, as I said, as the game gets a little bit quicker every year, and you get a little bit slower. Scott Gomez, remember when Scott Gomez came to the Canadians? Like, there's a guy, he got old like in 1 year, right? That move to the outside where you beat the defense, you couldn't beat him anymore. And that was it. You know, he was done. And as I said, the game keeps getting faster. And if you're getting a little bit slower, it's hard to play.
Yeah, there's a few guys that, you know, they could beat out Father Time for only so long. And one guy who probably doesn't get enough recognition around NHL circles for probably the biggest reason is that he's always played in small market. But also that he's American, not Canadian. It's Joe Pavelski. Joe Pavelski, I had to look him up. You know, I remember there was 1 year where everyone thought this guy, it was done. It was over for him. Yeah. It may have been his first year in Dallas. He played 67 games, 14 goals. Then, you know, fast forward, he's back to his 25-goal pace every year, and he put up 77 points last season. And he's on he has 48 points this season. So
just looking,
he's another one.
39 years old, just looking at you, right, 2019-20 with Dallas, 14 goals. Since then, 25, 27, 28, and 20 this year in 58. 39 years old. He was one of Cole Caulfield's heroes, another fellow Wisconsin guy.
And Cole I remember when he was on San Jose and I was a kid, because obviously as a kid, all you know is of San Jose is Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton, maybe Jonathan Chicho for 1 year. But really what I knew Joe Pavelski for, I remember every time, because it was also just when they introduced the shootout, every time they would put this guy on screen. It's Joe Pavelski's shootout record this season, 6 for 7, 8 for 10. Unbelievable. It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, you look at him, and that's another reason, like Josh Anderson, maybe next year he can bounce back and be that consistent 25 goal scorer. He's only 29 years old, off year for him this year. But Pavelski, I mean, that's one guy who he won't beat father time, but he's going to go 15 rounds.
He'll go the distance. It'll be by decision if he has anything to say about it.
Exactly. It'll be
To go back to Josh Anderson, maybe it could be because last year, while the production wasn't, you know, what everyone expected 30 goals from Josh Anderson, and that's just not who he was anymore after having those shoulder surgeries. But you know, he had 21 goals last year, and 19 the year before that. He's not 30 yet. You know, there's got to be juice left, and maybe you're right. Maybe it is just an off season, and it's getting more amplified, because I remember last year at the end of the season, we were talking about Josh Anderson. We were saying good on him. There was nobody in the lineup. It was basically him and Nick Suzuki, and both of them came to work every day, showed up on the ice, and were producing.
His career high goals is 27. If he scored on half of his breakaways, he'd score 30 goals. If he scored on half of his breakaways this year, he'd have 15 goals now. But again, the concerning thing is we're not seeing those breakaways now. We haven't, you know, it's been a while since you've seen them happen. You used to get at least one, sometimes two a game. And we're not seeing that as much now. And to me, that's more of a concern than the fact that he's not scoring. Because like I said earlier in the season, he was playing really well. The puck just wasn't going in for him.
So on the positive note of last night, and, you know, just to say one more thing, because it was on my mind when we were talking about him, Brendan Gallagher, like last night when they forget if it was the first or second goal by the Penguins, but they had scored the goal, and then they just zoomed in on Brendan Gallagher, and he looked wiped. He was done. It looked like for the night, and it was only the first or second period.
So. As I said, I mean, now you're seeing him. Used to see him die on the bench after every shift. Now we're seeing him die a little bit before he gets to the bench. And as I said, I don't know if the gas tank fills up as quickly as it used to either to come back for that next shift. And it's hard to watch sometimes. I was talking with Rick Green on our HIO show a little while ago. And, you know, Rick obviously played in the NHL for a long time. And he said, it's a horrible feeling when you're playing and you realize I can't do this anymore. Like, it's slipping away. And every professional athlete who's ever played feels it. Who's had a long career, you feel it. You get to that point where, you know, I'm sure Alex Ovechkin this year was like, what's going on, man? I'm like, I've always scored. Now you're not scoring. You know, I mentioned Scott Gomez before, and so many athletes. It's got to be a real, and as Rick Green said, it's got to be a really difficult thing when your whole life has been hockey since you were a little boy, and you've been one of the best at it, obviously, because you made it to the NHL, and then all of a sudden, you just can't keep up anymore, right? It's got to be, and you're realizing the end's coming, and nothing, you know, Marty St. Louis had a great line. We was talking about Joel Armia earlier this season. He said, you know, Joel Armia needs to realize that life in the NHL is short and life after the NHL is hard or long and long. And it's a great quote because it is. These guys live a fantastic life and it's a fun career, but it's over when you're like 35 or 33, if you're lucky. And, you know, most people in their business, whatever you're doing at 33, 35, your career is just starting to take off, right? You're starting to find your groove and where you might be and what the future might hold. These guys, it's over. And nothing they'll do in the rest of their life will have the same thrill, excitement. There's nothing else you do where 20,000 fans cheer you every night, or you know, everywhere you go, you ask for autographs. And that's what it's got to be a really tough feeling when you feel it slipping away. And with Brendan Gallagher being put on the fourth line, that's when you're like, man, you know, that's, you've gone from a first line 30 goal scorer to a fourth line guy making $6.5 million a year.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, you know, there is one thing, because it's one athlete does it. Well, actually, a couple now do it. One in the NHL that I know of, at least, and Mika Zibanejad, but Shaquille O'Neal. People my age know him as DJ Diesel these days. And he said it himself. He goes, I DJ because nothing gives me the feeling like going out for a game seven, like DJing a festival. And that's only one person rather than everyone, the fans cheering for a team. So it's tough.
You see it, guys, you know, former players who made millions and millions. Marty St. Louis. Marty St. Louis doesn't need money. You know, like, and he was asked, actually, when the Kings were in Philadelphia, one of the reporters said, you know, there's only two Hall of Fame players who are now coaching the NHL, him and Patrick Roy. Why do you think that is? And he said, the commitment. You know, it's a 24-7 job, 7 days a week. You got $50 million bucks in the bank. Rather go play golf, go for dinner, go to the beach, go whatever. Do that. But for a lot of guys, it's like Marty St. Louis loved nothing. Like, this is the closest he'll get to what he experienced as a player. And you'll see it with assistant coach. You'll see former baseball players who made $50 million and then they're coaching or managing like a class A team. And you're like, why? The lifestyle, right? They're used to being on the road and with their buddies and in a hotel and going out for dinner. And there's no other job that gives you that. And that's why I think, you know, you see some of these guys, you know, like Kirk Muller, for example. I mean, Kirk Muller is still an assistant coach in the NHL. He didn't play when the money was what it was today, but he made good money. But he's still, it's a lifestyle, right? They love the lifestyle, and it's a really hard thing to give up. I know one of the former Habs, I was talking with him, and after he retired, and you know, so maybe 6 months later, I said, "How's it going?" And he said, "It's tough." He said, like, it's, I was miserable. Like, you know, my wife was mad. Like, what's wrong with you type of thing. And it's hard to give up. It's a hard lifestyle to give up.
Well, it's also, you know, they're conditioned to that lifestyle. Most players, at least, since they're 16, 15 years old in junior hockey, probably even before that.
Yeah. And life is scheduled for them. It's like, be at the rink at this time, the bus leaves at this time. Planes at this time. Their whole life is scheduled for them. They don't need to plan anything, right? Everything, and usually their wives take care of the planning at home. So they just get up in the morning. Oh, got to be at practice at 10, morning skate. Okay, nap from 2 to 3. Game, you know, okay, we got the flight at this time. Like, your whole, everything's scheduled for you. Your life is planned out for you. And then all of a sudden it ends. You got a lot of money, but you got a lot of time, and you're young. What am I going to do now? You know, Patrick Roy had that great quote when he came back to coach the Ramparts again. And he said, you know, I played golf every day for 2 years and I got sick of golf. I got bored. Came back and coached the junior hockey team.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, I have this conversation all the time with my family members, uncle, mom, whoever it may be. I go, you think I'm ready to retire? I think I'm ready to retire. And they go, you're going to get bored. And I go, I don't think I will. And they're, I know you will.
I'm at an age, I mean, you know, a lot of my former colleagues, you know, Pat Hickey retired this year. I've seen a lot of guys retire. And if you like what you do, if you hate your job, I mean, you know, you want to retire. But if you enjoy what you do, I love what I do. I'm not in a rush to retire. But I've seen a lot of people retire and, you know, you have more free time and less money, right? And that's not a good combination. But then I've spoken with like hockey players and friends I know who have a lot of money. And they say it's not just money. Like, you need a reason to get up in the morning. You need something to do. Like Patrick Roy said, playing golf every day. Some people, I have a good friend of mine retired. He plays golf 7 days a week in the summer, and he is the happiest guy in the world. He absolutely loves it. So all he wants to do is play golf. Great for him. But other, you know, for other people, you need to have a you need to get up in the morning and have a purpose, right? You have something to do. You have something that excites you that you want to do. You know, some people might be happy sitting on the couch all day watching Netflix. Good for them. You know? But I know for me personally, the reason I'm not in a rush to retire is that I'd get bored. Like, you know, I have 2 weeks or 3 weeks vacation in the summer, and I'll play golf. I'll do a bunch of stuff. But by the end of the 3 weeks, I'm looking to do something again. You know, that's me.
That's the thing. That's the thing. I feel the same way. It's the same time. I felt the same thing after, you know, every time when I was younger, going on these 2-3 week trips to Europe, and you know, I'm having the time of my life. I'm seeing amazing things, and then, you know, let's say it's a 14-day trip. Day 11 rolls around, day 12, and you know, I'm kind of ready to go back home.
If you hate your job, I mean, I've been fortunate. I've never hated my job, but if you're someone who hates your job, I imagine you're counting down the days until you retire. I know a former colleague of mine who he wasn't in the sports bar, another department, but he had a countdown until he retired. Like, it's 6 months, 3 days, and 12 hours.
Oh, God.
And then I saw him about a year after he retired. It was in the winter. It was like February. And I said, how's it going? And he said, I'm going crazy. Like, the summers are great. You know, you're outside. And then February comes around, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, this is, like, you know, this is driving. I'm going nuts here.
You know, the good thing I'll say for a player like Brendan Gallagher, who retirement is coming up quick, or relatively quick. If he wants to stay in Montreal, boy, he can do anything here. You know, start any charity organization, do basically anything he wants hockey related. You want to start a hockey shop, a hockey clinic, he would do great.
I think he'll probably join Carey Price and Shea Weber and go back out to BC, though. I know he's got a nice house on the golf.
I wouldn't blame him.
You know, he's still a big star. You know, he was remembered from his junior days out in Vancouver. And, you know, Brendan Gallagher loves Montreal. He loves everything about being the Canadiens. He's been very open about it. But home to him is still BC. You know, when the season's over, he goes back to BC. So I would imagine when he retires, that's where he will end up.
And listen, after flying there a couple weeks ago, and there's less snow on the ground there than there is here now, I couldn't really blame him for going back to BC.
BC Vancouver is so beautiful. If you can afford to live there.
Oh, yeah.
If you can afford to live there, because it's not cheap, but if you can afford to live there, it's a gorgeous place. And Brendan Gallagher can afford to live there.
Yeah, I think he could afford one bedroom, one bath.
Do a search on YouTube. People watching the show, go on YouTube and do a search for Brendan Gallagher in summer house or something. The Canadians did a video of him a few years ago at his summer home, and it's right on the golf course. He has his own personalized golf cart, electric cart in his garage that he just drives to the course. He's got a nice. But when they did the video, it's like the ultimate bachelor pad, right? Now he's engaged. He met a nice French girl from Saint-Julie, and they're engaged. So I imagine it's not the bachelor pad setup anymore. I imagine there's not like a pool table in the middle of the living room and that kind of stuff. But if you do the Google search, the video is kind of cool.
I'm sure there's one room in the house dedicated to, you know, all the jerseys and hanging up memorabilia, but that's it. That's where the pool table's in the middle of.
Fiance, future wife moves, the whole house won't be a bachelor pad. I'm sure he'll still have his area though.
Yeah, exactly. But let's talk about some positives last night, because the Canadians, by all accounts, at least by my eye test, it seemed like they outplayed the Pittsburgh Penguins. If not, it was a pretty evenly matched game that the Canadian just couldn't beat Tristan Jarry for the life of them. But one guy who something jumped out to me was his ice time. It was Arbor Jack guy. He had 21 minutes, 23 seconds, which was a season high for him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's noticeably been playing better on the ice after struggling a little bit. And now, it's the story of the Canadian season. The fruits of the labor of his hard work in Laval and now back with the team have finally paid off.
Yeah, and he had 18 minutes a game before, which I thought was his best game with the Canadians. Another solid effort last night. He's you know, when they sent him down to Laval, a lot of people were upset. You know, they're playing mind games with him, and it did have an impact on him. And No, after the game dinner at the Bell Center, when I asked a question to Marty St. Louis, and I mentioned at the end, you know, it's sort of like the sheriff coming back, and he didn't like the nickname sheriff. No, he said, we don't call him sheriff, although I know Cole Caulfield does and some of the other guys do. But I think one of the reasons they sent the Canadians down, I might have said this on a previous podcast with you, is I think the shine on the sheriff badge was getting a little too bright too quick for Arbor Jack guy, and they needed to take some of that shine off and say, don't take for granted that you're here. You know, if you're not going to work the way we want you to work and do the things we want you to do, you know, you're going to go down to Laval and you're going to learn what it's like to be in the AHL, and you're probably going to appreciate it more when you come back up. And I think that message went through loud and clear. And he's come back. He was a little bit hesitant at first. And that's got to be a blow to your confidence. I mean, he is called the sheriff. You walk around town, people love Arbor Jack guy, the way they love Chris Nyland, the way they love John Ferguson, the way the city loves the tough guys who can play. And Arbor Jack guy was in that role. And he had a little bit of he came back. You could tell he was struggling with his confidence. He wasn't sure exactly what he was supposed to do. But now we're seeing that he's got the message, like, physical, tough. Don't take dumb penalties. You don't have to fight, but you can still be an imposing figure out there. He's got that bomb from the point. I mean, his shot, that's underrated. Like, that, how big a part of that of his game is. He's such a big, strong guy. He can really blast it. And those two goals he scored, he almost scored again last night against Pittsburgh. But I think it was a little bit of a wake up call that they thought he needed. And now we're seeing the fruits of that. Now we're seeing him coming back and going, okay, you know. And when I was speaking with him a couple of weeks ago, he says, you know, I know I got to be like the first guy on the ice at practice. I got to be the first guy in the gym. I got to do that. You got to do that little extra. And talking with Michael Pezzetta after Jack Guy was sent down, they're good friends. And Pezzetta told me about when he was sent down to the East Coast Hockey League a few years ago when he'd been playing with Laval. And he says, you get down there and, like, there's two ways you can go. Either you mope and you hate it, or you figure, I'm not staying here. And at the time, Pezzetta told me, he says, I knew I could play in the AHL at that time. I wasn't 100% certain I could play in the NHL, but I knew I did not want in the ECHL. Like, I'm too good to be in the ECHL. And he says, I put my head down, and he says, I gave that 5 or 10% extra that I thought I was giving. Like, I thought I always was, but then you realize maybe I wasn't. You know, I do have that extra 5 or 10%. And he did that in the East Coast League, and he didn't stay there too long, and he got called back up. And he continued that, and now he's at the NHL. So he told Arbor that story when Arbor went down. Like, you know, you might have thought you were given 100%, but maybe you weren't. You know, like, I know I wasn't, even though I thought I was. And I think that's what Jack Guy realized, that he thought he was giving 100%. He thought he was doing everything. And then you realize, no, I'm not. I got another 5, 10, 15% that I can give. And that was a really strong message for the Canadians to send to him. He got it loud and clear. You know, he came back up. You know, he took one game where he took a couple of bad penalties. He actually apologized to the coaching staff the next day for doing it. He realized he had screwed up. And now with the last couple of games, we're seeing him not taking those penalties, right? Still being a physical presence, still saying, you're not going to run my teammate, but not going over that line where he's hurting his team and ending up in the penalty box.
You know, it's great to see. You know what I'm thinking of is, we always talked so much how the Canadians – for the longest time couldn't develop talent for the life of them, and which is true. Now it kind of feels like it, because it kind of felt like then that it was the same thing over and over again. It was just, you're not producing, we're going to drop you down the lineup. And if you're not good enough, if you're not producing still, we're going to put you back and it's all on you. The Canadians now seemingly are treating their players as individuals, you know, catering to their individual needs. Like, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to treat everyone the same way, in the sense of, okay, Arbor Jack Guy, we sent you down to Laval. Okay, that's going to work for player X, Y, or Z. It's what we needed to do for him, and it worked for him. It's what they, you know, they dealt with Slafkovský in their own way. And it just feels like every player is getting their own, not special treatment, but personalized treatment. And it's for a purpose. Yeah. And they're treating them as such, and it's working out.
Some guys need a pat in the back, and some guys need a kick in the butt, and some guys need both. And I think Arbor Jack Guy was a guy who needed both. I mean, they've allowed the young guys to play with more freedom and not being terrified of making them, you know, make one mistake, you're not going to play again, you're going to sit on the bench, you're going to go to Laval or whatever. They've taken that away and let guys play their games. But if they don't like what you're doing, either on the ice or off the ice, or how you're preparing, how you're getting yourself ready, they send a message. And they sent that message to Arbor Jack Guy when they sent them down. But it's, you know, Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton and their communication skills for all of them are elite. Mark Bergevin's communication skills were not very good. If you want loyalty, get a dog. And first come, first serve. Remember with the contracts with Markov and Radulov, and then he lost both of them. But they communicate well. And it was communicated well with Jacki before he went down. They made it very clear, like, this is what we want you to do. And he came back. And from a coach or your boss and whatever job you have, if they're honest with you, that's the most you can ask for. Right? Just be honest with me. Don't BS me and don't say one thing to me and say something else behind my back, or just be open and honest. And these guys have been that. And sometimes it takes a little bit of tough love, and it took a little bit of tough love with Arbor Jacki. It couldn't have been an easy decision for Marty St. Louis to drop Brendan Gallagher down to the fourth line. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear people being critical of Marty St. Louis because he's more vocal in his news conferences if an Arbor Jacki screws up than if a Brendan Gallagher screws up. Brendan Gallagher has put a lot of heart and soul into the Canadiens, or he deserves to be treated a little different than a young guy with the team, right? He's gone through wars. He's blood, sweat, and tears for this franchise. He knows when he's not playing well. He knows when he's not doing good. He doesn't need the coach standing in front of the media running him down type of thing. The one-on-one conversation with Gallagher, I'm sure Marty's very open and honest. I'm sure, like I said, taking a guy, a veteran player like Gallagher, who earned $6.5 million, and telling him you're playing on the fourth line, that's not easy. That's it's not easy, I'm sure, for the coach to do it. It's part of his job, tough love. Not easy for the player. You hope he responds and fires back, and Marty moved him back up to the third line the last couple of games. But, you know, coaching or being a boss at any level, it's got to make tough, difficult decisions that people aren't going to like. But if you're straightforward and honest with them, I think it makes it better. And the people around the person, even though they're not affected by it, like if you're a Nick Suzuki, or you're a Cole Caulfield, or you're Juraj Slafkovský, and you see the way the coaching staff handles Brendan Gallagher and the way they handled Jacki, and that you go, okay, well, you know, that's there wasn't, you know, it was done in a classy type of manner, in a respectful manner. And that's been one of the biggest changes with the Canadiens with this new management team, is the communication skills and the way they treat people, the way they treat players. And that spreads around the league. Other players and other teams learn and hear about that, you know, you play Montreal, you get treated well. And again, you go back to, you want loyalty, get a dog, first come, first serve. The contract battle with Philippe Deneau and PK Subban. And I've said this many times before, I think Mark Bergevin's biggest downfall as a GM is he let everything get personal. And this management team doesn't make things personal. They do their job and they're open and honest, and they communicate very well with the players.
Yeah. And the players, it's not one of those things where, you know, they're God and you can't question. I'm sure things are a discussion.
Kirby Dach was talking about sitting in on the pre-scout meetings, and like he was giving input. It wasn't like he was just sitting there listening. Like they were asking, what do you think? You know, what do you think? And all the players have said that. David Savard told me that it was last season when I was talking with him. Like, you can go to him if Marty's doing something you don't think is right, or you think they could maybe tweak, you can go to him and tell him. You know, maybe you should do this instead, or maybe you should do that instead. There's not a fear of going. Like, at the end of the day, Marty's job is to make the decision what he's going to do. But smart people in any running any business take input from the people around them, right? At the end of the day, they got to make their own decision. But I found that really interesting with Doc when he was saying in those meetings, like he wasn't just sitting there listening. He was asked for his opinion on things.
At least for right now, it seems like they've struck a good balance of, you know, where they're seeking input from the players, but they still hold the power, and the players are aware of it. You know, like it's not a prisoners running the prison situation that everyone was calling it. What was going on in Toronto last year? You know, so that's not the case, but it'll be interesting when, I always say it, it's interesting when the Canadiens start needing to improve, or they do start improving, when Martin St. Louis has to make tougher decisions. Yep. Because right now his tough decisions, they're tough, but they're within the scope of his team. Yep. Soon he's going to have to make tough decisions that will alter, you know, where they will be in the standings.
And
stuff like that.
Ken Hughes spoke about this at the beginning of last season, I think it was. And he said, you know, this is year two of the rebuild. The pressure is a little bit more than it was last season, not a ton. It'll be a little bit more next season. I think the year after that is a season where now you got to make the playoffs, right? This is year four. Now it's time to get into the playoffs. And as Kent Hughes said, the pressure is going to build every year. And some people handle pressure better than others, right? So as the pressure builds up, some guys are going to crack under it. Some guys will flourish under it. Some guys will crack on it under it. But they're aware. Like Kent Hughes last season was saying, pressure is going to build every year. And as he said, on me and on the coaching staff, on everybody. Like Marty St. Louis almost gets a free pass now, right? Pretty close. I mean, he's here to rebuild. His mandate is very simple. It's all about rebuilding. It's all about the future. It's all about whatever. But at some point, it's going to be, we got to get in the playoffs. And if they're not, Marty St. Louis won't be behind the bench. All coaches get, I mean, it was really interesting. Like, he's like the ninth most longest tenured coach in the NHL right now. And he's been here 2 years. I mean, that's insane when you think about
unbelievable.
Ninth or tenth in the NHL, and he's been here 2 years. So it's, the pressure is going to get turned up on everybody. It'll get turned up on Kent Hughes, and it'll get turned up on Jeff Gorton. If year six, you know, and you're still not in the playoffs. I mean, look at Buffalo. It's 11 years now since they've been in the playoffs, something like that. Mm-hmm. At some point, the heat's going to be – right now there's not a lot of heat on Marty St. Louis, but the first – the players, the heat will get turned up on them, and then next the heat's going to get turned up on Marty St. Louis, right? And there would be a coaching change before there's a GM change, you would think. They're moving down the road, and then the heat will get turned up on Ken Hughes, and then the heat will get turned – that's just the way pro sports works, right? But for now, the Canadians are in – you know, Jeff Molson was willing to take a deep breath and do full rebuild and realize his team's not going to make the playoffs for a few years. But he believed this is what had to be done. I think it did have to be done. And it's a long process. You can't do it overnight. Again, this is only year two of the second full year of a rebuild. And they've also been hampered by so many injuries, which, you know, I mentioned earlier with Doc and Newhook threw a wrench into this year's plans a bit. But next year, I don't see them making the playoffs next year, depending what happens in the offseason or the draft and whatnot. But I think the year after, year four is the year, like, you got to be in the playoff hunt at least right up until the end.
Yeah. And, you know, just to go back, what I like that they're doing, it's a little bit of a different situation. Usually I bring football references to the table. Today, soccer. So, you know, I look at Manchester United because they were – everyone knows they were the top. They were the cream of the crop when it came to professional sports organizations, winning 20 Premier Leagues under the same coach forever. It's crazy. And then he left. And what happened was they'd always do these half-ass rebuilds. Not really a rebuild is the right term.
Retool, but, you know, as Mark Bergeron used to call it. Yeah.
They would give they would bring in a manager and they would give him, you know, a couple transfer windows to make it right. And if it wasn't right, you're out the door. They bring the next guy in and they got to that new manager has to deal with the contracts at the players that the old manager brought in. And it was just this vicious cycle. Finally, they put an end to that. I mean, obviously it stopped with, you know, they sold 25% of the team, but that doesn't matter. So the point is that they have a coach now and they're giving him time. Because these things, you can't just bring in a new culture and a new system and expect it to work in a year. No. It's impossible. You need to give these things time. And that's what I like about what Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton are doing, that they're giving Martin St. Louis the time and they're giving themselves time and saying, let's see if he's the right guy. We have to see if he's the guy for this project. And if he is, great. And if he's not, We're gonna give him ample amount of time to make that fair decision.
And look at the Rangers now, New York Rangers. Jeff Gorton started that rebuild, right? Then the owner wanted to rush it a little bit, got a little upset and got rid of Gorton. But now we're seeing what Gorton started, right? Flourishing. And you know, they have a solid plan. You know, I've mentioned, like, they talk about that 5-year plan, but the 5-year plan makes sense. You can see what they're doing. They're trying to accumulate as many players 25 and under as they can. And have them all blossom and come up together and all be ready to be at their best 3 years down the road or whatever now. When they're all 26, 27, you throw in a couple of veterans. You have your Mike Mathesons, a couple of veteran guys to fill it out. You might sell Brendan Gallagher around as a fourth liner, as a veteran guy to help out. But that's the way you got to build. and the plan's there. And, you know, they're loaded with young defensemen now. They're desperate for some offense up front. I mean, that's, you know, it's been so long since this team. That's why everybody's talking about Trevor Zegras and the possibility of ending up here. I mean, Gorton and Hughes are aware of that. And, you know, as I said, they got Kirby Dock in a trade 2 years ago. They got Newhook last year. I expect them to add another young forward this year through some kind of a trade at the draft or during the offseason. And you keep accumulating those young, talented guys in that age group. And that's one of the reasons, you know, Kent Hughes, one of the reasons he prefers like a Kirby Dock or an Alex Newhook over that first round pick is they're already a known commodity in ways.
Yeah.
They're further along their development. So that's a way to sort of speed up the rebuild a little bit, because we keep every year adding an 18-year-old, an 18-year-old, an 18-year-old, an 18-year-old. It's hard to – it's going to take longer, right? It's going to be a slower process. So they're patient with the rebuild, but moves like that are – that's how they're trying to make it move a little quicker, by getting a Kirby Dock who's already – got NHL experience, is already further along in his development. Alex Newhook, further along in his development. So, you can see the plan. Look at the way Juraj Slafkovský has blossomed this year. You know, earlier in the year, I wrote a column saying he's got to go to the AHL. He's not ready for the NHL. He looks ready now, and that's credit to the development staff. He
made a really nice pass last night.
Adam Nicholas is sort of the guy in the background. You know, we see him at practice all the time, but, you know, he's not on the bench. You don't see him if you're a fan watching the game on TV. He's up in the box with Hughes and Gorton. But he's worked with Slafkovský. He's always working with Slafkovský and always talking with Slafkovský and always sending him video. And he's such a positive guy when you're around him. He's like a guy who's always had like five cup of coffee in him. He's just so pumped up. Like nobody, I don't know many people of any people who love their job more than Adam Nicholas. He's just a hockey junkie, and he loves what he does, and he loves working with these young guys, and he's a fun guy to be around. So you can see Marty St. Louis gets a lot of the credit for what's happened with Slafkovský, but Nicholas deserves some credit too, and the rest of the staff around him. He's well surrounded, which wasn't the case before with Canadians prospects. They didn't have an Adam Nicholas on the ice working with them all the time, a director of hockey development. They didn't even have that position. So they've really, that's another part that this new management team has really improved as part of their overall plan in this rebuilding process.
Well, it's funny because Tony used to always say, you're the Montreal Canadiens. There's no salary cap on any staff.
Training, development cap
on any staff.
Development
cap. Just on the players on the ice.
Development cap last summer, there was like 15 coaches on the ice. They had Marie-Philippe Poulin was on the ice, right? She's one of the consultants. Mm-hmm. Vinny LeCavalier was on the ice. They had all these people around. It's just people to talk to or pick out a little thing here, a little thing there. Excuse me, you're right. There's no salary cap on coaching staff.
You used to say it all the time. Why don't the Canadians have the best scouting team? Yep. Why don't they have the best assistant coaches? Why don't they have the best? Because there's no salary cap, and you are the Montreal Canadiens. You're the third most valuable franchise in the NHL. You know, you're worth well over $1 billion, $2 billion, I think now. There's no excuse.
Since these guys came in, they built an analytics department. They've redone the medical staff and the training staff. It used to just be, you know, two guys were basically Frankie Bouillon and Rob Rammers, the only two guys really dealing with development. They got Paul Byron there now also. Like, what a great hire that was to have working with young guys. They're well surrounded. Like, they're spending money where they're, okay, you can only spend X amount of dollars on salary. Spend money elsewhere to make yourself better. And they have a private chef now, okay, who cooks all the meals for the players. Little things like that. There's no salary cap. Go out and do those things. Excuse me.
It's just about making yourself a desirable. First of all, for coaching staff, you need to have coaching staff. Yes. You need to have the adequate coaching staff. But for stuff like the chef and other luxuries, that stuff that brings you into the Premier League. That while obviously money will attract talent, to a team, but. You know what? Would you you're in Montreal. The winters here are brutal.
Yeah.
You know, to go the extra mile and to say, hey, we're gonna have a private chef cook you every single meal you want for your family or wherever you come to the rink. It goes a long way.
I don't know what a private chef costs, but it's not $6 million a year, I'm sure.
Yeah,
in the bucket for what the Canadians, as you say, $1 billion business. But like the guys show up now on a practice day. You show up at Brossard, they have their place upstairs. There's a guy making you breakfast there. And then you finish and you see after the games, you see the guys leaving with their, you know, looks like almost an Uber Eats takeout bag.
Yeah.
Food. They're, like, these guys are fed. You know, there's big investment in these guys. What they put in their body, it's part of the investment you're making in these players. And you see them, you know, they get fed before practice or leaving practice. They have food with them. After the games, they walk out. They got a post-game meal if they want to bring home with them. Healthy, obviously, good food. And, again, just it's part of this full rebuilding process.
So, speak of the rebuilding process, the next big date for the rebuild is coming up quick, 2 weeks away, March 8th, the NHL trade deadline. So, listen, I think that one or two more players will be moved out because they want to sign those college free agents, or if they want to bring Lane Hutson from Boston University over to directly to Montreal. Yeah. You got to have space on the team.
Yeah. I'd be shocked if Lane Hutson doesn't play before the end of the season, because Ken Hughes has already said he wants to sign him after his university season ends. And I'm sure part of that signing will be to burn up the first year of the entry level deal and have him play a few games this season and play a few games, and there's no pressure, right?
Yeah, of course. End of the season. Yeah. Especially when other teams that have already solidified their playoff spots. Mm-hmm. That's when they start to see Montreal, Arizona, Chicago, San Jose on the schedule, and they start to take the foot off the gas a little bit.
Yeah, and just give Lane Hutson a little taste. And he's a college kid too. It's like he hasn't played preseason games, right? They're not allowed to play. Mm-hmm. He hasn't. You know, he's been at development camps. He hasn't been through a full training camp and played at the Bell Center and experienced everything that comes with that. So he'll get a chance to do that.
So March 8th is that date. I will be back the week after March 8th. So, Stu, until then, thank you very much, as you always join me almost every Friday.
Yeah, enjoy your time off.
Thank you, Stu. And I'm Matt O'Hanlon. Like I said, I'll be off the next 2 weeks. I'll be in Boston next weekend and then New York the weekend after that. It must be nice to be me. All right. Thank you very much for listening. Tony's back on Monday. We'll catch you then.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.